Well, good morning, everyone, and it's great to be back amongst you. It's been a curious season, first of all with some illness, and then Vianna and John and I have enjoyed a trip over to Sydney and enjoyed coming back to Adelaide, which I can tell you is a lot quieter than Sydney. Anyway, lovely to be back. Our focus through this season of Advent is woven around a number of themes, but the one theme that predominates across them as the passages come to us in our lectionary this year is the theme of joy. Joy is one of those words that is, you know what we're talking about, we know it when we see it or experience it, but it's really hard to define. You can't put joy on a scientific laboratory bench and examine it and prod it and talk about its dimensions. So for those whose vision of the world is limited to what you can just put on a laboratory and investigate scientifically, are missing out on so much. Similar to love and those sort of themes, but joy is a profound quality that drives the desires for most of us, if not all of us. There's a whole cluster of words that we can relate to around and relate to joy in a variety of ways. No single one of them defines joy, although you wouldn't exclude them from the experience of what we mean by joy. But joy gets to the heart of the gospel message. It's a powerful theme. In fact, as I was preparing for this, I was struck again how much it is just ever present in the Psalms and in the prophets and elsewhere. I love this quote from C.S. Lewis, one of my favourite quotes from C.S. Lewis. In many ways, it's such a British statement. Joy is the serious business of heaven. Our merriment must be between people who take each other seriously. Joy is the serious business of heaven. It's a powerful statement, and one in which the words could be teased out so much more. The sense of serious, not in the sense of being solemn, but in the sense of being really, really important. And it's what the kingdom is about. If you know C.S. Lewis, he has written a powerful book describing his conversion experience, which is the name is Surprised by Joy. It's a bit confusing because at a later stage of his life, he met who was to become his wife, also called Joy. So when I was a teenager, I thought, of course, Surprised by Joy probably refers to his wife. I'm sure he was surprised by her. But it's talking about his whole experience of discovering a quality that cannot be otherwise attained. And it features a lot. This particular quote is in his book, Letters to Malcolm. Joy does relate to relationships. And some of those moments of joy we can capture, we can glimpse, because it comes through the enrichment of relationships and especially presence. One of my favourite scenes in movies is the final scene in the classic Christmas movie, Love Actually. It's been around for quite a while now. But you might remember the final scene shows Heathrow Airport and just a number of people getting off flights, coming through the gates and being embraced by a family who have been sitting and waiting for them, and often children running up and those moments of reunion. And it's the presence that comes into that space. Now, there's many other scenes of life, you know, the birth of a child and other things that are just, joy is the closest you can get to try and describe it. Joy is more than happiness. We'll come to that a little bit later. But it does include those emotions that are powerful. And joy also comes in the context of people who bring joy with them. I'm going to ask you for a moment, if you want to close your eyes or just reflect for a moment, but who comes to mind when you think about a joyful person entering your room, entering into the space, who comes to mind? My first reaction is some of our grandchildren. They're all got different ages, and going with the different ages, they all have a different demeanour. A couple of them are getting into those early teenage years and sort of a bit of a whatever, but still give us the big hugs. We've got one of our grandchildren who's just exuberant. You know, you step into the room and she sees us and she's there. And she's full of her stories and everything else. When I was reflecting on it, it took me by surprise that when I was thinking about someone who had a remarkable capacity for joy, it was a youth group leader I had. His name was Martin Woods. I haven't had contact with Martin for decades. I know he went into fusion and other things. He's the sort of person that you could go on a bushwalk with him for 3 days in the snowy mountains of Sydney, not see anyone. And the first people you see on the path knew Martin. Oh, Martin, yeah, of course. but he had that quality, that positivity. It wasn't a show. It wasn't artificial. It was just who he was. He was just joyful. And you couldn't help but be drawn into the slipstream of that joyfulness. Not sure who you haven't had in your life and different experiences who just have that ability. When you see them, your heart just leaps. You have a sense, oh, I'm just so glad they're here. Now, we could say that about every one of us in different ways and different varieties, but there's a quality of joy that is powerful. And it is that quality of presence that gets to the heart of how the gospel is about joy. Because you could almost say that Jesus is the joy who we encounter. When Jesus enters into our life and we begin to relate to Jesus, realize he's not distance, but he's actually drawing us into his presence. Can you imagine how it would have been to have been brought into the presence of Jesus? See him like Zacchaeus hanging up on a tree or back of a crowd and being drawn closer. And that moment when Jesus looks at us in the eye and smiles. Joy is being in that object of someone else's joy. And the short version of where I want to land today is that when God looks at us, knows us by name, God is joyful. God takes delight in us. Isn't that a powerful thought? So let's see how this is traced up. Now, there's a lot that could be said, but we're going to focus on that passage from Philippians. And I'm going to limit it to just a snapshot of what we can see in this letter to the Philippians, which a number of you know that I've sat with for many, many years. But it opens right up front. Paul says, I thank my God every time I remember you. And that's a big remembering. It's a sense of you're not forgotten. You're not to one side. In all my prayers for you, for all of you, I always pray with joy. Because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. The partnership language in Paul was a very rich word. From my first innings at St. Matthew's years back, we used to have Koinonia Sunday. You might remember that word that has no easy English translation. It is partnership, it is to share, it is to participate, it is to have fellowship together. It's to enter into what the gospel is doing in our lives, in our church, in our community. And Paul says that when we share in that gospel together, joy is the only word I can think about, he says. So let's unpack it a little bit further. The remarkable thing about this, and this is what separates joy from happiness, is Paul's circumstances. Happiness is dependent on our circumstances. If things are going well around us, we can feel happy. Have some good things happen, we can feel happy. Paul wasn't in good circumstances. He was writing from prison, probably in Rome, and in chains, as he said, and the prospect of his own death. Paul knew what it was, an austere, fearful place to be. And he wouldn't be saying it's all good. Elsewhere, he says, we can be sorrowful, but still joyful. It's a remarkable juxtaposition. We can grieve over the world around us. We can look at things and just moves us to sorrow. Yet we can still have that quality of joy. Now, Paul gives us some hints. It isn't just light words that he's tossed out there. So there are 10 references to joy in this short letter to the Philippian church. I'm just going to run through them briefly. What then? He says it later on in chapter 1. Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. He's talking about how the fact that he has prison guards watching over him. He says, I have literally got a captive audience because they're not allowed to leave me. So they are hearing the gospel. And he talks about later how a number of them came to faith, having heard that. Remember, it's also in Philippi, in the narrative in Acts chapter 16, where Paul and Silas are singing away in prison, of all places. He says, yes, I will rejoice. If Christ is proclaimed, I will rejoice, even in the midst of the chains. Later on in chapter 1, convinced of this, he says, I know that I will remain and continue with you all, for your progress and joy in the faith. It's because the faith that he shared, brought to Philippi, and the church was established for his witness, continues on, whether Paul is present or it is not. And he talks about joy here as part of our Christian growth. For your progress and joy in the faith is a forward-looking growth, that you're growing in joy, you're discovering more about what that looks like and what it means. And then in chapter 2, he talks about the way in which they relate to each other as a church community. Paul says, complete my joy. It's actually a strong term. Make a choice to do this. Complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Now, there's a whole lot to be unpacked behind that particular passage in Philippians 2. It's not saying you have to agree on absolutely everything. He said, but you need to agree that the mind that matters is the mind of Christ. What Christ thinks and what Christ is doing, at that point you should be of one mind. You can choose different food, you can choose all of it, bits and pieces, it doesn't have to be all exactly the same, but at that point, sharing in the mind of Christ that entered into the world and that gave up status to enter not just as a human but also even as a slave to serve. He says at that point you need to be of one mind. Paul continues, even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith. This is Paul in chains in prison and saying, even if I am to die, even if I am to be executed, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Likewise, you should also be glad and rejoice with me. Why? Because he is about the work of Christ. He is about the mission and ministry of Christ. And he said, even if I'm in prison, even if I'm executed, I'll rejoice if I can contribute in any way in God's grace to the mission of Christ. Chapter 2, he talks about, I'm even all the more eager to send Epaphroditus, therefore, who's been visiting Paul in prison, that when you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious, so receive him in the Lord with all joy. In other words, recognize that in his presence we are sharing in the joy of the Lord. The joy that comes from when God sends out his people. There's a powerful sense, and I can only touch on it briefly, that, and it came up in our devotions this morning with Fiona, with our Lectio 365, that the three ways or three comings of Christ, it's the Cistercian model of things, and I've forgotten the name of who it was. Bernard of Clairvaux, thank you. I knew by looking at Fiona that telepathically the words would come towards me. Thank you. Bernard of Clairvaux says the first coming of Christ was coming of as the baby into Nazareth or Bethany and then grew up in Nazareth. The second coming of Christ is the return of Christ, when he will return, the second coming. And he said there's a third coming of Christ, and that is the coming of Christ in each one of us as we bring Christ with us. And that's what Paul was talking about here. The presence of Christ that is coming through visits, through Epaphroditus and through others. Chapter 3. Finally, my brothers and sisters, rejoice in the Lord. This is an imperative. This is a choice to be made. Something that we could choose to say, no, I'm not into that. But Paul says, no. Rejoice in the Lord is to say that enter into the joy that Christ has. Enter into that deep sense of hope, of purpose that Christ has. Chapter 4. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm thus in the Lord, my beloved. This is a beautiful statement where Paul was talking about the struggles that he's had in his own life. He gave up everything when he followed Christ. He set aside his theological education and his status as a Pharisee and all that he had by way of the opportunities in Jerusalem. He says, I gave it all up because it was worthless compared to knowing Christ Jesus. And he talks about his joy through it. And at the end of this chapter, he says, you want to know what really makes me joyful, Paul says? When I look at you, when I think about you, when I remember you and the faith that you've entered into, you are my joy and my crown, my Stephanos. You know, that's the crown that's placed on the head. As Paul says, if I'm to be judged by anything, I'm happy to be judged by you. It's a little bit that sense that we can have when we see people that we may have mentored or encouraged grow up and to find their own voice, their own ways of doing things, their own gifts, and we see them flourish. You know, whether it's as parents or as grandparents, or whether it's people that we've seen grow up and through the church and now are doing amazing things, it can give us joy to look at that and think, well, maybe just some encouragement that I've provided over the years, some assistance or support at times. That is the real sense of joy. And then one of those great statements, this is the verse I come back to time and time again. It's on my wall in my office, and I shared it with my father a lot. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, Paul says, rejoice. And it's not just a denial. It's not just say pretend everything's all good. Paul wouldn't do that. He says, in the midst of all this, rejoice. Why? We're going to come to that now. So unpacking a little bit more, just that, coming back to the opening words where Paul says that how he has been remembering the Philippian church, praying with joy for all of you in my every prayer. How much does joy permeate our prayer life? If we are thinking about what God has provided for us, God's faithfulness to us, his mercy, his compassion, God's presence in our life, that he knows us, we should be recognizing that. Because of your partnership, this is that word koinonia, or fellowship in the gospel. We're in this together. We share this together, and it is good. We're sharing something that is an absolute delight. There is nothing else that can satisfy us in life other than what we get through Jesus and the working of the Spirit. That's what C.S. Lewis was on about. Continues on, I'm sure of this, that he who started a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. Now, I don't know about you. You might be someone who is obsessed about finishing every task that you've ever undertaken. Or you may have boxes tucked away in house, or in my case, if I go into my workshop and shed, and there's a whole lot of things that I tucked aside and thought, I'm sure I could do something with that. still sitting there 10 years later. I'm sure I could do something with that. Not. But God is not like that. Paul says, God will finish what he has started in each and every one of us. That is why Paul was so confident. He says, God is not a quitter. And even when we may mess things up and we make missteps, and even when I'm sure God would be, with a slight paraphrase, be saying, what were you thinking to us? You did what? You chose what? God says, it's okay. I've got this. We can still redeem. We can still transform. I can still pick you up. You haven't lost your way so much that I'm holding you at a distance. He who has started a good work in you will carry it on to completion. And then finally, still in the same passage, you can see why Paul was just so focused on this. And you are all partners with me. The same word, koinonia, you're sharing together with me in grace, both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel. That is what is binding us together. Whatever circumstances we face, we are sharing in the grace of God. In fact, we are bringing the grace of God to one another in our prayers and in our encouragement and our time that we give to people and getting to know people's names and people's stories. This is the serious business of the kingdom. So Paul finishes this one's opening section, and I pray this, that your love will keep on growing in knowledge and every kind of discernment. Knowledge isn't just head knowledge. It is knowing God, knowing Christ. And as J.I. Packer powerfully put it many, many years ago, not just that we know God, but that God knows us. So that you may approve of the things that are superior and may be pure and blameless in the day of Christ. You can look at things and you think that is just artificial. Those promises that come with advertising and all the promises of delight and joy and happiness that comes if we just buy this product or go on this trip or have this experience, we can discern that none of that's actually going to deliver that real deeper desire. And we grow into that discernment. And then the final verse in this section, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. That language of fruitfulness is the language of the gospel. That is what is growing within us so that we become expressions of that fruitfulness. Now, I want to stop at this moment. I've got a few more things just to touch on briefly. But what does this mean for us as a church? I've been reflecting on maybe we should make seeking joy to be the theme that we pray for and commit to in 2025. As I've been preparing this, I've been thinking, that's not a bad New Year's resolution. I can even get in ahead. To experience more the joy that God is, to get closer to God. Another quote from C.S. Lewis. Either the day must come when joy prevails and all the makers of misery are no longer able to infect it, or else forever and ever, the makers of misery can destroy in others the happiness they reject for themselves. It is true, isn't it? That as some people can bring joy into a room, others can bring misery into the room. Discouragement, cynicism, dare I say it, grumpiness. We can choose to set that aside. And as a church community, the serious business of joy is us to choose joy Choose positivity, because God, who has started a work in us, will bring it to completion. So it is in that sense that it's not surprising that joy is one of the fruits of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace. Paul says in chapter 4, joy is central to worship and community life. Paul's exhortation, rejoice in the Lord always, suggests that joy should permeate Christian gatherings and relationships. And it actually is quite countercultural. It isn't just a sense of some, dare I say it, British, you know, culture of, we're not quite into, we do have very, 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 very deep joy, just that no one else can see it. But it's there, it's just deep down. But there's a sense in which, you know, that derogatory statement, oh, they're a happy, clappy church, as though, oh, goodness sake, what is wrong with being a happy church? Even clappy. But joy actually is part of our gospel business. And there can be cultural wars within churches over styles and hymns and everything else that says that, you know, some things are just not respectful. They're too happy. People are laughing too much. Actually, joy should be a feature of our church gatherings. Fiona and I and John attended a church under the bridge, Kirribilli. It's a church that's got a big reputation, absolutely packed with no air conditioning and Sydney humidity. And everyone was full of joy. Poor old John had to put his headphones on because they were so full of joy. But it was exuberant in that space. It is one of the challenges that we do have, is that we don't diminish joy. Because we do have a capacity to say, well, you know, that's just... Oh, there you go. That wasn't intentional. Got your attention anyway. So that sense that joy should permeate what we do and allow ourselves to have that exuberance at times. And I do think there's work for us to do in that space. Quiet and reflective is good. Yes, absolutely. But always quiet and reflective? Not so much. To have that joy. I was struck in our prayer morning on Friday morning at Fiona Led, had make a new song, which is actually saying we can't just rely on the old songs. That when God is doing a new thing, it should demonstrate itself in new songs. Not just ones that were written in the 20th century or the 19th century or whatever else, great classics. But let's be open to some of the new songs and the newness of what God is doing. The one thing that did strike me, and I had some conversations around what is happening around churches in Sydney, and the sort of challenges that we have are not just our own, they are widespread. In Sydney, there's about 20 churches that are showing growth out of about their 350. But the ones that are showing growth are the ones that are seeing God doing a new thing. And if we're going to seek joy, then we have to be seeking God to be doing a new thing in our midst. And the practical expressions of that. What's the takeaway? Well, it can include how we lead worship and how we cultivate unity and excitement about what God might be wanting us to do, and fostering our spirit of gratitude and celebration within the church. It's not silly, actually, to suggest that maybe we should embrace seeking joy, the joy of the Lord, joy in the Lord next year, and set aside cynicism or skepticism, negativity, or dare I say it, even occasional grumpiness. So, conclusion. And I'm mindful of the time. But this is really what separates joy from just an artificial happiness as such. Godly joy is emotional. We shouldn't be afraid of that. We are whole beings. But it is more than an emotion. It's not just seeking that emotion. Joy is a gospel quality. It's a spiritual attribute that we should seek to recognize and to give expression to. It is a ministry to be shared in our shared fellowship and grace that we bring to each other. This is my summary as I was last night thinking through, what am I actually trying to say here? This is my pages saying, what am I trying to say? Joy is a reflection of contentment and thankfulness. Elsewhere in towards the end of Philippians, he says, in all circumstances, he says, whether I've been well provided for at times or whether I've actually been really hard up at times when things have been blessed and times when things have been a challenge. In all circumstances, that is where we find that peace and that joy and being thankful to God for it. And finally, and this is the big one, this is what the gospel can bring by way of joy that nothing else can bring. This is what C.S. Lewis discovered in his Surprised by Joy. Joy is grounded in what God has done, is doing, and will do. And that is as big as all creation and as personal as coming alongside each and every one of us. In us and through us, both personally and as a church community. Godly joy doesn't mean less sorrow. Jesus wept for Jerusalem. He wept for the world around us. He wept when he saw people's struggles. But it means remembering that God is in that space. God is in control. God will complete the good work that he has started in every one of us and in us as a church community. Amen.